I've been drenched twice today.
By the big rains?
By the rains, yes. You're having those in Ohio, too?
Yeah, we've been getting a ton of rain the past 2 days. It's starting to let up a little bit now. But yeah, it's been the most water that we've seen in quite a while.
I guess like it's probably my fault on both accounts of getting wet today.
Did you...
The first one I woke up and I was just like, oh, I want to go for a run, but it is raining. The Dark Sky app was like, oh, it's light rain. And I was like, oh, cool. That sounds great. Light rain, I can do that. And it didn't look like it was intensifying. And then I got out there and it was just jumping buckets on me.
Oh, man. Running in the rain's probably no good, right? I can't say that I've done it often, but I know that the wet clothes thing is super unpleasant.
I think if you just look at it as like a thing that's going to end at some point, it's not as bad as you think it is. I mean, wet clothes is always unpleasant, but like I focus more on like, oh, I'm going to be in the shower and like dry it off and like just, you know, cozy at home soon after this. I mean, a lot of people just opt to not do it at all. Yeah. The chafing is the worst part. Yeah, I will say that. But if you're only out for like a 5 mile run or whatever, then you won't chafe. I usually don't chafe unless it's like 8 miles or more. Mm. And then my nips just get raw.
Well,
the second wet thing that I had was I was en route to record Good One, and I was doing that at New York Magazine. Mm-hmm. At their headquarters in Manhattan.
That's
so
fun.
It's, you know, like, yeah, it's a 20-minute train ride for me, so it's like it's a pretty short commute. And you know, I leave the apartment and I have this rolly bag of gear. It's probably like 25-30 pounds. I'm like, okay, cool, let's do this. And I hop on the train and I get off of the train in you know, on Canal Street in Manhattan. And it's just like, once again, after my morning run at 7 a.m., now it is almost 1 o'clock. I have to be there at 1, and it is dumping. Getting there at 1 is early also. It's me getting there early enough to set up and give myself ample time. And I get off the train, just dumping again. And I kind of just stood under a scaffolding in my raincoat with no umbrella, with my waterproof boots on, but just regular jeans on, being like, oh, man, I really was not expecting this. And I just stood there and I was like, it's 5 minutes to 1, and I can see the door of the place probably like, that's my dog shaking out over there. And you can hear the, it must have been like maybe 1,000 feet away from me that I had to get to. But by the time I crossed the street, I did it and I was like, okay, 1,000 feet. By the time I got like across the street, my pants, it looked like I jumped in a swimming pool. Like it
and,
was,
and you said jeans too, right? So geez,
yeah,
wet denim.
Hmm. I'm not exaggerating. This is not hyperbole. This is nothing. It looked like I jumped in a swimming pool. I get into the lobby of the building. I'm like drenched, carrying this now drenched rolly bag with none of the gear got wrecked because all in Pelican cases and stuff, which is nice. But I get to the security guard. I'm like, hi, I'm here to New York Magazine, floor 4. And the guy's just like, okay, just let me see your ID. He has no idea who I am. He just gives me a pass, and I go up and I meet the host of Good One, Jesse David Fox, and he's a writer for Vulture. And he's first time we're meeting in person. We've been emailing back and forth probably like 3 or 4 months now. And he just like looks at me. He's like, oh, I'm like,
not what I expected.
It's really raining out there. It's just like the most horrible first impression you can make on another human being.
Hey,
besides, you know, like offending them. Besides how you look, it's just like I shaved, I dressed nice for the occasion, and I should have taken a cab is kind of the moral of the story, but I decided to live that monthly subway fare life.
That's okay, man. It's just the elements, as long as the gear's fine,
I guess. Yeah. And then I set up and everything, and that's what I was telling you. I was resetting up my rig because I had to break down everything before I left.
You had to actually take your gear?
I took my computer and I took my interface, because my interface has inputs that are just so awesome. Just the preamps are just the best. And I didn't want to use the Zoom recorder that they usually use, because those are noisy ass preamps.
Yeah, you want to up that game. So when you put out that that first episode for them, they're like, holy crap.
This will be the second episode of the season.
Okay.
The first episode, I guess I can say it's not a secret, because it's going to be, by the time this airs, it'll already have been out. It's going to, the season's going to start with Nick Kroll. And I really hope I get to do that interview.
Hey, that's really cool. He's the man. That's awesome. Yeah, congrats, by the way. That's like a really good show. I think that's
it is
gonna be great for you.
I'm psyched. It was Jesse and I were talking after the podcast with Phoebe. We were interviewing Phoebe Robinson today from Two Dope Queens, and we were talking about the idea of the Good One podcast, which is just he basically envisioned it as Song Exploder for comedy, but then realized that, you know, like music, you have stems and tracks and you're layering it together. And when you're talking about a joke, you don't really have like, you have elements of a joke, but it's more about, you know, the same voice painting with different textures. I don't really know, but essentially it's just not, it's not as systematic. You can't go through it as systematically as you can with music.
He means it in the analytical sense, digging into the joke and where it came from and how it's formed, but not necessarily like the minutiae and the technicality of.
Well, actually, he is getting into that, and I praise him on that too, because that's what he's doing. He's like, he basically picks their brains about like word choice instead of using like instead of using asshole, he uses the word butthole in one joke. So he asks them about that, or, you know, it's very specific in the jokes. There is like a little bit of, you know, what's it called? Like, you know, vague, like, you know, tell me your writing process or whatever, or where were you at this time in your life? But then he does break the joke down as best he can, but it's not like compartmentalized, is I guess what I meant to say before, like where you have the bass track right now, or the drums and the vocals and what effects you're putting on and what is this thing doing over here? It's more a sequential kind of thing you got to go through with the joke. The rises and falls.
That's pretty cool. I think that's a, when you're talking about possibly getting that show, it's like, oh man, that would be a good one. Like that's no offense to like any of the Headgum podcasts, but like, this is one that I've heard of. I've other than We Hate Movies, I guess, but I don't think that was originally a Headgum podcast.
No, that was on, I don't even know. It was, it's a now defunct like movie network. They don't exist anymore where they started, but
I had heard about that one, of course, from you. I don't know. Did you hear about them before Headgum? I don't even know.
We Hate Movies?
Yeah. Cause I feel like you've been talking about them for years.
Yeah, I had a friend who I was listening to, what was it called? What's the other Hate Movies podcast? How Did This Get Made? That's on Earwolf, right?
Sure.
Okay, yeah, well, I believe it's on Earwolf. And they, you know, I was listening to like, you know, and it's that, and someone goes, oh, there's another really good one called We Hate Movies that my brother listens to. You should listen to this. And I tried it out and I thought it was just so much. It was, I guess it's better for me. I wouldn't say it's like a better podcast because We Hate Movies sound just sucks. I say that because I haven't been able to record them, and I say that purposefully. But
oh yeah, but, How Did This Get Made? Yeah, that is Earwolf. That's that Paul Scheer, Jason Manzoukas show. That new the new episode, or the latest episode, I guess it's like over a year old at this point, had Starlee Kine on it.
Really?
Yeah. She was, it was one of those appearances that she's done since Mystery Show, where in the parentheses next to her name, it says Mystery Show, as if it's like still a thing.
Oh yeah.
She's been doing that. She's been writing on that for a while, which is really weird because it's not even, I don't even know if it's like her most well-known thing, but.
Probably. I mean, she was a This American Life contributor for a while and then she moved on to
But I would
Mystery
say that.
Show.
I would say that because I think she still contributes to This American Life. I would like tout that if Mystery Show's dead. I don't know. That's one of those like weird things. It's like, what do you, because obviously when you're working in like the entertainment industry and you're talking to people like that, or on a podcast or something like that, you want to get tied to something to give you some, you know, bit of legitimacy, I guess. And then the thing is, it's like, okay, what do I say, especially if you're not like really tied to anything anymore. This is something I ran into with the VBR podcast. I would have people on that I've worked with forever, but they're not currently doing the thing that I know them from. So it's like, what are we plugging here? And then whenever I'm on the Modern Vinyl podcast, like, it's like, okay, what's the one thing that they're going to pick for me when they introduce me? And it's always Bantha Fodder, which is, I guess it's probably the thing that I put out the most of, which is pretty sad given our schedule. But yeah, that's an odd thing.
Choosing your byline.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
figuring it out.
Especially like, if you've done a lot of things, do you choose the most recent thing? Do you choose the thing that people maybe most will know you from? Do you choose the thing that you did for the longest amount of time? Like,
I think it's the second one, probably.
Yeah. I guess so.
Well, because I feel like the second and third are not always the same thing. You know, the thing that you've done for the most amount of time and thing that most people know you for. But typically, I feel like most cases, most bands, you know, like, will get that. I think, like, Jay Massey from, like, Dinosaur Jr., like, he's been doing his own thing for a while. But, I mean, I think he would just be Jay by now. He wouldn't just be Jay of Dinosaur Jr., although that's something he has in his past. I don't know. I just think of, like, people who kind of transcended their bands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like...
Also, it's like whatever, you know, like it's, what's his name?
Frank Turner?
No, I mean, there's a million people like this, but like people who just try and run away from their past or like what they're run away from some aspect of their career. Mm. You know, like, I feel like Jack White probably does this with some stuff or like you can't mention. Oh, Billy Bob Thornton, when he was like the guys, he was not campaigning. He was on like a press junket as a musician for his album or whatever. And he's like, you can't mention me being an actor, and somebody mentions him being an actor, and he got up and left, or whatever, called the dude a fucking asshole and left. Like, it was just that's the thing that people do.
There's another guy kind of like in our racket. He was in American Pie. Thomas Ian Nicholas.
Which one is that?
He played Kevin.
Is he the a cappella dude?
No. No, Kevin he was like the friend. I think he was dating Tara Reid's character.
He's a kid in King Arthur's Court.
Was that another movie? He was in Rookie of the Year.
And he's Sandlot, Rookie of the Year. Yeah. He did them all, right?
Yeah, so I mean, he was like an established actor. He was in like well-known movies, but now he's like his thing is that he's in a band. Like his entire identity is now consumed by being a member of a band, which he named after himself, which is, I guess, probably a smart move, but...
What's the band's name? Kevin?
The Thomas I'm Nicholas Kevin. Band.
Oh, okay. I was hoping he used Kevin or something like that. I'm Kevin from American Pie is the name of my band.
Kevin and the American Pies. Yeah. Man. Yeah, it's just like one of those things. I think like identities are really strange. When people tie their identities to like their creative output or their work, it's always interesting to hear like what they choose. Because I mean, you could choose anything. When you introduce yourself, you could say that you're, you know, like an avid reader. You could say that, you know, you're like a dog rescuer, or there's so many different things you could say. But most
times, well, they say, "What do you do?"
Yeah,
I guess now I say I work in tech support, and I also I'm a podcast producer. I guess that's. But then they're like, "Oh, well, tell me about the podcast producing, because tech support is the most boring thing you can tell you do."
Yeah, yeah. They leap on the creative thing first. For sure.
Yeah, like, well, let me make it clear. I don't make a lot of money doing this. So.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's an entire different thing. That's like putting yourself down, because I do that all the time. It's like,
oh, dude.
You're like trying to qualify it when you don't need to. Like, they're already interested, and you're trying to tell them why they shouldn't be interested. I do that in interviews. I do that with friends. I do that with colleagues. It's one of my worst traits, but a lot of people do it.
Like 4 or 5 years ago, I was at a party, and, what did I do? I was talking to a girl, and she was asking me what I did. And I was like, it doesn't really matter. And she's just like, well, why? And she's like, I work in tech support, whatever I said. And she's just like, and she's like, people must bombard you with questions all the time about stuff in tech support. I'm like, yeah, they do. That's why I usually don't mention it. And then she just goes, oh, you should just tell people you work at a grocery store or something really boring that nobody would care about. I'm like, I'm single at the time. So I'm like, oh, well, I mean, if I told you I worked at a grocery store, you probably wouldn't have any interest in me. And she's like, pause. Yeah, you're probably right about that. And I was like, okay, good. I'm glad. And it became apparent that this person was not somebody I would be interested in at that point. But... Mm-hmm. But I don't blame her, you know? I mean, maybe it's I think my job is pretty uninteresting, and
I think the trick is choosing something that fits about the same pay scale, but is less interesting to talk about. So if you work in a job where you make a decent salary, if you just say finance, nobody's going to ask you any more questions.
I don't know, but maybe where you are, but in New York City, if you say finance, there's like 100 finance bros that are going to swivel their heads and be like, yo, bro, what do you do? Like, if you're in the wrong bar and you say, I work in finance, they'll swivel and just converge on you.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. When I went to New York the one time, I've only been to New York City once, and I was there for less than 24 hours.
That's right. I remember that.
And
we occupied the same space, but we had never met before.
Yeah, that's right. That was so strange. Like, we were actually in the same room. It was a big room, but we were in the same room. I took a photograph in that room, and it wasn't until I was already back in Ohio that you saw the photo on Instagram and said, "Hey, I was there."
I feel like you could have spotted me.
Maybe. We didn't know each other at the time. Not like we had yet to meet in person.
No, we didn't.
We hadn't even like started. That was like pre-podcasting.
6 months.
That was like
pre-Bantha fodder.
Yeah. Definitely. I think we had maybe talked on the phone maybe once, but yeah,
probably.
I don't know where I was going with that, but I was in New York one time for 24 hours. Oh yeah, yeah. So we went to
the Finance Bros.
Yeah, the Finance Bros. We went to a comedy club. And, okay, so the we that I'm referring to, it's me and a couple of my friends from high school. My buddy who travels back and forth to Honduras a lot for mission trips. He just had a ton of Delta miles that just need to get spent. They're going to expire, and he basically had enough Delta miles to pay for three of his friends to fly round trip to New York in a span of 24 hours. So we just did it. We're like, why not? Like, okay, spend a couple hours on the plane. We get an entire day. We don't have to sleep when we're in New York, and then we'll come home. It'll be fun. And
did you sleep?
I slept in the terminal waiting for our plane to arrive, and then I tried to sleep on the plane home, but you know, that's tough.
You didn't get a hotel. That's brilliant, actually.
No, we came in. We landed. I mean, we took off from Ohio at like 5:30 in the morning. And then we got to New York like bright and early, like had plenty of time to, you know, get around. We got dropped off at, we said Times Square, or my buddy Joey said Times Square, and the cab driver, it was actually an Uber driver, got us to Rockefeller Center. He's like, "Is this close enough?" And like, we don't know.
It is close enough. Totally close enough.
I was like, I wanted to go to Rockefeller Center anyway. The Lego store's here. I said, sure. Yeah, this is great. And we get out, and like, I'm the last one to get out, and I'm in the front seat. And and he's like looking at me, and he like holds out his hand for like a tip. I'm like, what? And he's like, it's customary to tip. And I'm like, just because I'm in New York City for the first time, and you know that from the conversation that we were having, doesn't mean that I'm going to tip you, my Uber driver, with cash. I know that's not how that works, but
oh, okay. I was worried where this was going. I thought you're like, then I didn't tip my cab driver. I was like, oh, interesting play.
No,
in New York City.
He's an Uber driver. Like,
he wanted a cash tip. Okay.
Yeah.
Some of them have cash boxes in their Ubers.
Yeah, that's like, fine. He was just trying to take advantage of me because he thought I wouldn't know any different. Because this was like at the time when like Uber was definitely, if it was in Ohio, it was only in Cleveland and nobody was using it yet. There was like two drivers kind of like wasting gas. But yeah, we got dropped off at Rockefeller Center. We got to see like you know, I went to the Lego store. I was really happy about that. And then we went through Times Square, yada yada yada. At the end of the night, my buddy Chris is having a really hard time, and that's because he didn't go to sleep the night before. I don't know if he's just like too excited or just thought he could like handle it or whatever, or thought he could sleep on the plane. He had never been on a plane before, so I reckon he was probably nervous. Because he was like shaking on the plane. And sorry, Chris, you did great, buddy. But he was exhausted. Like, he had been up for like 24 hours at the time that we landed. And then we had an entire day in the city, and we didn't plan on sleeping or stopping anywhere. So we just kept going and going, and he just kept getting like more tired. We eventually met up with our mutual friend, Dan Bogosian, and one of our other friends from Under the Gun, Derek Scancarelli. And they're like, okay, well, how about we let's go to this bar to get you guys some food, because we're like, we have no money. We flew in there because it was free. We still had no cash. So we went to this bar that like serves hot dogs for free, and they're disgusting.
Dan loves that bar.
Yeah. He's all about it. So we went there, had some really, really nasty hot dogs. And then he's like, okay, let's go to a comedy club. And at the comedy club, my buddies were all like, we're all at this table. They're sitting right by the stage. Judah Freelander was the act that night. And you know, he does a lot of bits where he's just like, you know, talking to people in the crowd. This is a really small club. So we asked my friends, like, where are you guys from? They're like, Ohio. And he's like, okay, why are you here?
and they just, I don't know where it came from, but they just started lying. They just said that they are in finance and that they are there on business. And then he spent the next half hour to 45 minutes just tearing them apart, talking about like how they, you know, making like finance jokes, which like made no sense, but just like tearing apart the fact that we were all wearing like part of our bit was that we were just like all dressed up. We were wearing like button up shirts and jackets. Like it looked like we were in New York City on business.
Oh, you should have said that from the start that you look like that. Because that totally paints a different picture. I mean, like, oh man.
Yeah, we're walking around the entire, but we're like totally disheveled. Like, you know, we've traveled in these clothes. Like we've been, you know, we don't look at all like we're on business. We look like really shitty business people. If we were actually in any meetings, we weren't closing any deals. That's for sure.
This is in the evening, right?
Yeah.
Most of the finance dudes look pretty disheveled by the end of the night.
I guess that's fair. That's fair. But yeah, no, I guess like we were the most unbelievable group of businessmen. But when you say that there's plenty of like finance bros in the city, like, that I'm inclined to believe you.
Plenty of Ohio people pretending to be finance pros.
Potentially. Or like he thought, okay, they're just like another group of like these assholes. And yeah. So that was a good
He night. Probably has a whole bit for finance people and he just pulls it out whenever he feels like it.
Oh yeah, probably.
Whenever he gets one in the audience. That's the way to do New York City, I think.
Don't live here
for 7 years. Do it in 24 hours.
No, man, I got the vibe like within the first 2 hours that I was like, I could never live here. They're like,
that's what everybody says.
No, I mean,
you either say that you don't, I guess, but nobody's lukewarm. And I was like, I guess I could warm up to this. It's either you hate it or you love it. And then
I don't know
I moved here and I hated it.
I don't know if I hate it. Like the energy is fun. You know, just the breath of the city is really interesting, but
The piss smell is what you're referring to?
Well, the piss
smell. The breath of the city is just piss.
The breath.
Everything is
with,
piss.
With a D. But yes, the breath of the city is really stinky. But no, I've been in cities that I love. Like, I love Chicago. And it smells like piss every other street there. But I don't know what it is about New York. I think it's just, it's too big. Like, my anxiety just can't handle it. It's just too much. It's like overwhelming.
It's not that big, man. I think about how I live in a 10-mile radius. I think we've probably talked about this before.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Like yes. Like if you're talking about square mileage, yeah, it's not.
Like
it's
I
not
can
that
run
large.
From one side of Manhattan to the other in like 10 minutes. That's all it takes.
Okay.
It's like 10
distance doesn't matter to me because I don't leave my house. Like it wouldn't be any. It probably wouldn't be too much different. And I live in New York. Like yeah, it's super convenient that there's so many different things like within a 10-mile radius or whatever. But what I'm talking about is just like the sheer number of people. Like I don't deal well in crowds, and New York is basically like living in a crowd, and I don't.
Oh yeah,
I don't deal.
Did you take
well
the subway while you're here?
Yeah, we took it. We went to the World Trade Center, and then we walked to New York Times, and yeah, I think we may have taken it twice because I think we took it to get back towards the airport. But yeah, that was interesting. Loaded up my card, everything. That was fun. I don't like that at all either. Just too many people crammed into one area. It's just like really weird. I'm one of those guys that just like pays super close attention to absolutely everybody near me, and I think that's why I get anxious in crowds, because I literally can't, like, there's just no way, like, I'm looking at everybody all the time. I can't be chill with my girlfriend in like a crowd or at like a zoo or a theme park or something, because I'm just always scanning, and when I'm around that many people I get nervous, and there's like too many folks to look at. I'm like constantly checking that my wallet is still there. Like I'm a anxiety riddled twerp in a city like that. And I just couldn't handle it. But for 24 hours, it's a good time. Cause I can just look back on it and say, yeah, that was like a crazy day.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to do it. You can't really turn over too many stones. Like you can't hit that brewery out in Brooklyn that you wanted to go to. You can't really see a park in Queens or whatever, or go to like the museum. Mm-hmm. You can't really do any museums, I guess, if you only have like a short amount of time.
I know.
You spend like an hour in each museum.
We almost went to the
the World Trade Center Museum, because it was, I don't know, it was there. And like, we were kind of like, at that point, it was like late afternoon, early evening. I guess it would probably be evening at that point. The sun was starting to set, and we were like, okay, well, we don't really know what else to do. Like, we've seen Times Square. We've seen Central Park. We didn't make a plan. So it wasn't like there's an itinerary. We were just like, okay, what do we want to see next? And we weren't like thinking, okay, well, planning by the subway line, this is here and that's close to that. So let's do those two things together. We were just like, oh, let's go see this next. And we go all the way across town. So like, we were wasting a bunch of time that way. But then we were like, okay, this is like a really like the 9/11 memorial was like really sobering, and we were starting to come down a little bit, and we saw the museum over there, and we're like, okay, well, that would be kind of cool. But it was one of those like free weekends. I don't know what like the Bureau of Recreation or whatever is, but they had like a free weekend for the museum, so it was packed and there's no way we could get in. But that's when we met up with my buddy Derek and our friend Dan, and they took us out for a ride, honestly. Dan, if you're listening to this, like, don't forget how much money you still owe my friends, because Dan Bogosian just like came down. He's like, yeah, let's go to these bars. Let's go to this comedy club where drinks are ridiculously expensive and they don't tell you the prices on the menu. And then you buy way too much.
It's a two drink minimum too, right?
Yeah. And there's a cover and like, yeah. So basically Dan drank his heart out, and then he's like, oh, I don't have any money on me. So the tourist picked up his bill. I love that.
That's
man.
Great.
Good times.
You guys got taken for a ride.
Yeah, I can say I got mugged in New York City by my friend
by
Dan.
By someone you know.
By a good friend. But no, it was cool. Actually, I think he might have bought us some pizza after that. I think we went to Joe's after
that. I expect
that.
A strong rebuttal to this episode from him.
I don't know if he's listening. Honestly, like I feel bad. I don't talk to Dan that often anymore, but I think that's just like, it's part of this like ongoing struggle in most of our lives, where it's like, okay, who are we going to keep up with for this period of time? And it waxes and wanes.
Well, who's got the time to keep up with everybody?
It's really hard. And it's usually like, I don't blame people when they like reach out just out of nowhere and just like see how it's going. Like, some people might hold a grudge and say, okay, you haven't talked to me
sweet.
4 years. What do you want? Cause some people get real, you know, contentious about it. Now, if it was somebody that I hadn't talked to in a long time because of a specific reason, that would be one thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Lately I've had some folks like reaching out and like saying, hey, how's it going? And in a lot of cases, it's because they're getting like time hop reminders that they were a guest on my podcast 2 years ago. And they're texting to see if the show's coming back anytime soon. But other ones, you know, it's just like just seeing how it's going. And that's great. Like, I love that. And
yeah, it's sweet. I think it's nice to let people know you're thinking about them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have technology now, so it's like super...
It should be easier than it is,
super convenient. Well, I think the hard part about it is just the social constraints, like, or like the, I don't know, the norms, the social norms that you kind of try to have to fight about. Like, I don't know. I try and if something like triggers me during the day that makes me think about a friend, I'll usually text them. Mm-hmm. I'll be like, oh, I was just thinking of you. Because I think that is really sweet. I think it's like there's probably degrees of it where it would be weird. Like
when they follow up with people, like, so anyway, people, yeah. I need this.
If I've spent like less than a day with you, then I probably should not text you when I think of you randomly for some reason. Like, if I and yeah. It also has to be a really good reason. Like, I can't just pass the bar we hung out at once. I'm like, oh, pass an Alligator Lounge. Remember when we got free pizza there with our beer? That was magical. It's a magical night. No, I don't, it's not like that. It's more about like really, it's gotta be those annoying inside jokes that you can't text anybody else, I feel like.
Oh yeah.
Actually, or like a podcast idea that's to somebody who likes podcasts or something, like, oh yeah, like this, they said this on this podcast, and that's probably where most of my communications come from. It's like, oh, you'd think this is really interesting because they're like, oh, I do find this interesting. Thank you so much. Person I haven't spoken to in a while.
Right. Yeah. I guess a lot of mine are like our old jokes, like old, you know, inside jokes, or like people who want to talk to me about a mutually dead friend, which is,
they're like complete opposite spectrums, but either way, like, they're actually both really nice interactions that I think about a lot. Like, when I get a text from somebody that I haven't heard from in a long time, those people are on my mind for like the next 36 hours.
Yeah. Well, cause yeah, I mean, is like anything weird happening to you during the day? Just something out of the normal, you know, just interfering with your life.
Yeah, I guess so.
Not in a bad way. I mean, it could be in a bad way, I guess, if it gets you thinking the wrong things.
I don't get to see the friends that I traveled with to New York very often. Some more than others, but you know, we move apart. One of them's married. Life. But the other day, I saw that Stripes was on Netflix, and that was the movie that we watched before that trip, or before one of our trips. It's a Bill Murray war movie. Had Harold Ramis. Okay. It's a great movie that goes on for like an extra hour too long. Like, you think the movie's over, and you're like, man, that was a great one, and then they keep going for like another 45. But yeah, there. I just remember like an inside joke from that movie, and I texted that to the group, and that was a nice like 5-minute conversation where they all replied like one thing, and that was that. Adulthood's sad and weird, but it's also.
I was just thinking about how unsexy adulthood is.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, I don't know. There's because the thing is with adulthood, you theoretically, and how we always thought about it growing up, is you think. Yeah, when I'm an adult, I'm going to have so much freedom. Like, me and my friends are going to be able to do whatever we want. It's going to be great. But then you and all those friends stop talking. And not for, like, any good reason. It's just because, like, things come up. They're, you know, dumb responsibilities and all the stuff that your parents and your grandparents told you about when they're telling you to, like, cherish your youth. But it's just a weird thing. And sometimes there's no reason for it at all. Like, there's no reason why my friends who live within, you know, 20, these friends of mine, they all live within 20 minutes of me. There's no reason why we can't make time for each other at least once a month, but it's just,
there's usually a reason.
There's planning. I mean, you gotta plan it. And
I mean, that's New York City in a nutshell. Which I think is just to say that's the American experience, or it could be the world experience, but it's not uncommon to live close to somebody here. And, you know, like, I, within a 3-mile radius, I probably have like 10 people that I know. I mean, mm-hmm. I have people, I ran into a really good friend on the subway, and we realized we only talk when like this other friend is in town, you know, mm-hmm. or something like that, yeah. You know, and we're always like, why don't we hang out more? It's like that scene in Waiting where the boss, like, I never really got understood why we don't hang out more, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. You know, I just was thinking, you know, and it's the truth, but I think that's the human experience is just kind of being too involved with yourself, your own things, because we all do have a lot of shit going on at this age.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stop. There's not going to be a time where we mellow out until we're all 60. And, you know, by that time, the herd will have thinned in certain respects. I have a really different experience than you, though, in terms of, like, I keep in touch with all of my closest friends, and they all live in Boston, so if I go there, I get to see all of them, mm-hmm. typically. And it's not often, but I'm still talking to them literally every day, multiple times a day.
This is the group chat that you talk about often on Bamfrider,
yes, the
right?
Mythic group chat, group yes. Chat.
So when you come to town and you all hang out, is that rare for them? Like, are you the friend in town for that group?
No, they're all together right now. They all took, like, a trip up to Vermont from Boston last weekend.
Oh, cool.
And they're all just, like, wishing they were still there and thinking about what a great time they had. And,
oh, man.
Here I am in New York getting rained on.
I have a friend in town, and that's my buddy Jared, who lives in Kansas City now. And when he comes home, it's like, it's an event. Like, he usually lets me know first. And then we have to decide whether or not we're going to make it a surprise for, like, the rest of our group. And usually that's not a good idea because we're adults. And especially now because our like, mutual best friend has a baby. So you can't just spring stuff on a parent of a 2-month-old like that. But yeah, when he comes to town, it's historically, it's been like the most really, it's the only time I see that mutual friend of ours who lives the next town over. And there's no reason why we couldn't hang out like once a week. Like, he doesn't live very far at all. But when the friend comes in town, it's kind of like a thing. So when he had his baby, this friend of ours, I have been making it like a conscious effort to hang out with them for like May and I to go over there, or if I happen to be in town, like, drop by and, you know, and see his wife and the baby and say hello, because it's only going to get harder for them and for us to like keep in touch. So like staying conscious of that is something that I'm, one of the things I've been focusing on lately and trying to be, I guess, a little more present in the real world.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think making the effort is at least half of it.
Well, usually it's them. Like historically, if we do hang out with them when Jared isn't home, it's usually around some kind of holiday and they're having like a little party or something at their house. And so we'll come over and maybe one or two of his work friends or something will come over and those are always fun. Like it's always great times and it's always like, why don't we do this more often? Which is, you know, that's the phrase that you hear a lot in adulthood. Why don't we do this more often?
But well, that's one of many phrases, like the weather, reverting to conversation about the weather. I can't, like, I die inside when I think about how often, like, I get in the elevator with one of my neighbors and they're just like, man, it's a beautiful day out. Or like, or it's, you know, during the dog days of summer, we'll be like, oh, what a brutal day, huh? Like, man, it's great. Or like if I'm going for a run in the evening, like perfect time for you to run. The weather's going to be great. I'm like, why are we doing this? Why are we talking about the weather? And I guess it's just because we have, you know. And I was telling Aaron the other day, I was like, why? It's so weird that I have no friends. We live in I think we counted a 36 unit building, and we can't figure out why we don't have any friends that we hang out with. Like there's a couple on the fourth floor we're friendly with and we say hi to, and we walk our dogs together, but we don't like get together on Friday nights or whatever and watch a movie or like we don't, it's not like it makes me miss college to a degree. My college experience, I lived in a dorm for 2 years, the first 2 years of school. And it was like, oh, we want to go see what so-and-so is doing. I'm going to go down to the third floor and go over to their dorm and like, we'll hang out and then we'll go to the dining hall. We'll come back and, you know, watch a movie or whatever tonight. And, or like go to a campus activity together. Like college was great for that, you know, just having friends in close proximity and feeling like you couldn't live without them or couldn't do anything without them. Mm-hmm. But now I live in close proximity and all we want to do is just stay not remembering that we all exist. You know, like I have a neighbor, they can probably hear my voice every time my podcast. It's really annoying for them. And, you know, I have people, like I hear a person sneeze downstairs and I'm like, oh, that's right. I'm living on top of many people.
Yeah.
But it's weird to me that, you know, it's just not somebody to hang out with all the time.
Yeah, it's true. We've got a younger gal who lives below us, and yeah, I've talked to her twice since she's moved in, and you know she's like around our age. Like she works at the same college that May does. Like, there's no reason why we couldn't hang out. And I don't know if how much I talked to you about this, but the prior tenant, she worked at another college in the area, and she was, you know, she's like a middle-aged woman. She lived there with her son. But before they moved out, they had an intern staying with them. He worked at the place where she does, and he's originally from South Africa, and he actually went to Bowling Green, which is in Ohio, but he was doing his internship, down here. He's working on his doctorate or something crazy, ridiculously intelligent guy. I hung out more with the intern than I ever, like, I talked to the person who lived downstairs from us for 3 years, maybe three times, and they're all because of something that had to do with the police being on our property for some reason. Like, you know, reasons that you kind of have no choice but to talk to the people downstairs. And yeah, and, like, I actually, like, hung out socially with the guy that was just staying with them for a couple weeks, like, four or five times, and he was super great. Just a weird little interaction. It's just,
here's a question though, how did he end up hanging out with him? Just because
did,
you were
how did
running?
I because he's super yeah. friendly and he said hello, like he initiated,
right? So that's how it happens. Is I think about all of my friendships like that have gone the furthest. Like my group chat wouldn't exist without Ben, and Ben and I met in karate and when we were like 5 years old. Isn't that cute? Yeah,
seriously.
Yeah, in karate class when we were 5 years old.
Oh,
and
my God.
And he invited me to his like sixth birthday party or something like that. And if he hadn't invited me to that party, like he would have just been any other coworker in my life, any other person. It's just, you know, and I think about the people I hung out in college, and I really, you know, when I talk about like going to see somebody, like I didn't have those people to see when I started. Those people came to me, to my dorm. And there's always people that were just more outgoing than me that would just thrust themselves into my life in a good way. but yeah, it's just, it was a really, it's weird and sobering to think about how it just takes that kind of, what do you call it in chemistry? The, catalyst, I guess, in this case, is somebody who's more outgoing, extroverted, and just feels okay kind of thrusting themselves into your life and not really caring if they're making you uncomfortable, because man, if they're making you uncomfortable, you'll say something about it, or you'll try not to hang out with them again. Or maybe they're just that desperate for company. I don't know.
Boy, now that you've said that, I just in a flash added context to every best friendship I've ever had.
Uh-huh.
And they all start out that way. I initiated none of them. I don't think. Today I would say, you know, my best and my longest friend is my friend Dan. And we went to preschool together, and that's where we met. And we met because we had the same shoes. And that was enough to base our friendship off of. I don't know if I can, like, totally recall who initiated that conversation. It could have been me, but it was also preschool. And I don't think it matters. But everything after that, it was always, like, somebody either, like, initially picking on me or, like, joining in the activity that I was doing and with the intention of making a friend with me. I don't know that I've ever, at least not in childhood, I don't think I ever, like, really made a friend of my own volition. I was, like, totally content with, like, being alone by myself. But then somebody stepped in and, like, popped my bubble and said, hey, look, I'm here and I want to hang out with you.
Were you thankful for that when it would happen? I guess you couldn't be self-aware younger, but like later on in life
for sure.
As an adult?
No, I'd say even like younger, because I moved schools in eighth grade. Like middle school is a really tough time to leave because you spent so much time with those people. But when I moved to the new school, you know, I was like, there were like two people there that I knew. One was the cousin of my best friend from my old school, but like, I always grew up thinking that he was like a dork and I made fun of him. So like I would sit with him at lunch, but it was really awkward because it's like every bit of our former interaction was at his expense because my best friend was his cousin. And for some reason, I thought that gave me like license to be mean to him also just because his cousin was. And like that makes sense. Like, yeah, cousins can be contentious, but I shouldn't have picked that up. So my first like real friend there was this kid that I'd made fun of forever. And the other person that I knew was a girl who I went to CCD with. CCD was like a Catholic kids.
Catholic Children's Dungeon.
I don't think
that's what we used
dungeon.
To call, we used to call it Central City Dump is what we used to call it when we went to CCD.
All right. So you know what I'm talking about.
I went until fifth grade.
Oh man. Oh geez. Yeah. I think, we finished First Communion and that was about it. We also had a change of staff at church, but, anyway, so this girl was in my CCD class, but there had been some years between that and she would like, she'd said my name in the hallway and I heard my name come out of a classroom. Like I looked back in there and like, is that a teacher who was like expecting me or something? Am I going towards the wrong room? And no, it was like this younger girl, my age. And she knew me and God, I felt terrible because I had absolutely no clue who she was. No clue. And, she had to remind me and we ended up dating, but, where was I with this? Oh, yes. Yeah, but no, I was grateful. No, I was grateful for that because, you know, only having that one, like, really awkward, I wouldn't even call it friendship. It was just a place to sit at lunch. I didn't even have any classes with him. So I was just sitting at lunch with him and his friends, and they're all talking about stuff. And we had things in common. Like, we're all in Boy Scouts. Like, he was a Boy Scout in a different troop, and all of his friends from that troop were also sitting at the table. And we all became really good friends after. But I didn't really make a true friend until there was this class project and you know we got grouped up and so I'm like grouped up with a couple of guys and I overhear them kind of off by themselves because they're not like really helping with the project but they're you know they're just like joking. They're obviously like best friends who very luckily got put in the same group and they're making references and talking exactly like Napoleon Dynamite, which was my favorite movie at the time.
Oh, have I got a picture to send you? Let me see if I can get this going. You keep telling your story while I keep fishing.
So Napoleon Dynamite was like it was absolutely like it was a force within my life. Like, I watched that movie every week. I own the DVD. I watched it all the time. It was just like a huge part of who I was at the time for some reason. Like, I thought it was really funny. And I was watching it with my friends who were also in my scout troop back in Ritman. And when I moved schools, I didn't change my scout troop. I stayed with the same group of guys. Cause it was, we didn't live that far away from my old town. My parents just really wanted me to go to a new school. So I was like, hey, I know that movie too. So I start jumping in and I'm like repeating lines back, you know, like they say a line and I say the next line. And obviously I like stepped on somebody's punchline and they were ticked off about it. And like, they were really mean to me. Like they were really mean. They're like, no, like that's our thing. Like they dropped their act and they just like got serious. And they're like, this is very much our thing and you are not allowed in it. And I see your picture and oh my God.
For anybody listening to this at home right now, Jacob just received a photo from me at the age of 16 years old, dressed up as Pedro Sanchez from Napoleon Dynamite, along with five of my friends, all dressed as other characters from the film Napoleon Dynamite.
You got Kip, Rico, Deb, you got the whole gang here. This is fantastic. Oh my, wow, yeah. Where did he find those boots?
Which ones? Oh, those were, I think they're ski boots or like,
yeah, they're
ski boot liners, I think.
Oh, I love it. That's great.
Yeah, it was a good day,
man.
We can talk about that after, but anyway, your Napoleon Dynamite story.
No, for sure.
Like, you made friends through Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah, no, I think this is great. Cause like, you know, the school that I came from, it was a thing. Like it was a thing all over the place. The kid that won the talent show the year that I left won because he looked like John Heder. He had that going for him. And he was also very strange. And he watched that movie a lot. Enough that he memorized the entire dance from the, like, the talent show bit.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Memorized the entire dance and did it for the talent show. He got a perm specifically for it. He was dressed, you know, just like this friend of yours here. I mean, he like, really crushed it. And he deserved the win. But it was, like, a thing. So when I came to the school, I'm like, oh, cool. Like, it's a thing here, too. There's, like, there's some mutual interest here. Maybe I can make some friends. And it just didn't work out that way. They were so mean to me. And so I was on this bus that most of the buses just went straight from the middle school to their homes, just dropped them off. I was on this bus that didn't have very many kids on it because we lived like the furthest away, which actually doesn't make sense now that I think about it. But our bus would go from the middle school to the high school. We would get off the bus at the high school. We would, and she never like gave me directions for this. I think about this all the time. Like, we just like go to the high school and then everybody starts getting off and she's looking at me. She's like, you need to get off. I have no idea why, but I get off. I'm like, okay, are we switching buses? Like, is there something wrong with this one? I have no idea. And then she just leaves and then there's no new bus. And so at this point I don't have a cell phone. I'm just like sitting alone on this concrete slab next to the high school of this new school. And I have no idea what's up. And I have nobody to ask, except for these two guys that were like total jerks to me. So I'm like, I'm just sitting there alone. I'm just waiting for whatever. And it turns out that this bus is tasked with like dropping us off, picking up all the kids from the high school that just need to get off, like dropped off further into town. Like, these aren't kids that need to be bused home, but our schools were on like a busy road. So they just need to be driven like the mile and a half back into town and put in front of their houses, or put in front of the middle school probably, and they walked home from there. And then the bus comes back and picks us up. And so, you know, this is like a daily occurrence for me. They do this every single day. So I go up to the high school and I'm there for like 10 minutes and then I get back on the bus. And there was this one other kid on my bus, who, you know, he was obviously like, he was like lower class, and you could tell it's like, you know, just the way he dressed. And, you know, as a kid, like you learn to prejudge these kids, and it's not a good thing, but as a kid, it's what you do. And he apparently was friends with these other two guys, and those two guys were only on that bus that day. And I'm not entirely sure why.
but they weren't there again. So that was a, that was kind of like a relief to me. I'm like, okay, at least I don't have to be like stuck here for them to realize, oh, we have nothing else going on for these 10 minutes. We can just pick on this kid, Jake, every day. So it was just time for me to sit there and read my book, because as I've mentioned before, that's basically all I did in middle school until I moved. And so these like first couple weeks, I just sat there and I read my book quietly. I waited until the bus got on, got there. I got back on the bus. I opened up my book and I read until I got home. Until one day, this this disheveled looking kid comes over and just starts bothering me. He's like, hey, your name's Jacob Bender, right? And I correct him, like, no, it's Jacob Tender. And he's like, okay, whatever. And he just decides in that moment that I'm his friend. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, cool. Just
does he say it with a declaration like that? Like,
no, he does.
We are now friends.
Yeah, he's like, I think we're friends now. Like, okay. I'm like, oh, great. Like, this kid has a has a mental issue. Great. My first friend is a kid, is a kid that has a mental issue.
Like how you perceive wanting to be friends with someone as having a mental issue.
No, it's who does that? Who just comes up to somebody, says their name incorrectly, gets corrected, says, okay, I think we're friends now.
I feel like I've seen that in the movie somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure he did too. And yeah, I'm just like, I'm kind of just interested in reading the latest in the Aragon series right now. Nice to talk to you. And and I thought that was it, but instead he like pulls out this miniature skateboard from his backpack.
A tech deck?
No, like a mini board. That's what we called them. They were
like what a human would ride, not what fingers would ride.
Yeah, okay. It's not like a full. It's like maybe half the length of a skateboard. Really, it's like barely big enough for one middle schooler size shoe. Penny board is like is sort of about the same size. Those are made of plastic. Mm-hmm. This is like a shrunken version of a normal skateboard. He pulls it out. He's like, "Do you skate?" I'm like, "I'm thinking, I don't. Do you? Because you're holding this." And I don't know. He got me up and he got me to like try riding it around. It's the first skateboard I'd ever tried to ride since I was like, you know, probably like 5 or 6 at one of my distant cousins' houses, and I fell on my head and I wasn't allowed to touch them anymore. So yeah, I don't know. From there on, like the 10 minutes after school, like weren't just like lonely, unbearable moments waiting for the bus to come back to take me home. It was like this kid named Tweet who became my friend. Like he just decided that we were friends, and we were, and he's like one of the best friends I ever had. And he's since moved like shortly after high school. He moved to California to live with his brother just to kind of get out of our town, because he wasn't going to go to college and there's just nothing for him there. And it's not like a big rough town. It's a very small rural town, but you can get in a lot of trouble there with, you know, drugs and things. We have a pretty big problem here, but yeah, like he decided that we were friends at that point. And he was like the first friend that I made. And I was very lucky in that he was friends with those two guys who made fun of me, because we ended up becoming like a foursome at some point. Like we were allowed to make Napoleon Dynamite jokes together, and we became friends. And one of those friends was the one that I went to New York with. He like, you know, he's the one that had the miles and paid for my ticket. And those miles came from his trips to Honduras, where he met his wife. And I was involved in that wedding. Like it was a weird serendipitous thing where I probably wouldn't have become friends with those people if it weren't for this weird kid who just came up to me and said, "We're friends now."
It's so much relies on that one little thing.
Yeah. Such a strange thing. And it completely changed my life, because up to that point it was, you know, I had friends at my old school. And we would, you know, we'd go like riding our bikes around town and like doing things that the kids do. But I was still like, I would still spend a lot of time reading and, you know, doing all that. But because I like lived in this new school district where I was still I was actually closer to the high school of my old school than I was when I lived in town. But I wasn't in the same district. So I would still be hanging out with my friends in Rittman. But I was starting to make these new friends in this new town. And it just changed my world. Cause I like started putting down the books and I started asking my parents to like drive me over to these friends' houses. And I don't know, like from then on, like
your world slowly starts to expand.
Yeah.
That's what happened to me. Like I live my life in this small town, and then made friends with Ben and started branching out to Marblehead and kind of went back and forth. And then Ben and I would start going to Boston for shows or something like that. And, you know, you're kind of in that region. We go, then we started a band, and then we would go record in, you know, way up, like upstate New York with somebody. And then we'd go on tour, and your world starts expanding as you get older. And that's, that's such a weird concept. Like, you go on family trips and stuff, but that kind of feels like a, like an umbilical cord, you know, still to your regular life back in your hometown, whatever.
Yeah.
But as you start kind of expanding it for yourself, that's where I think it gets really interesting. Like, I think last episode we talked about how I went whitewater rafting with Aaron. And I think a lot, like, I was driving, you know, leaving New York City, crossing a couple bridges, entering like kind of the foresty Connecticut area, and just kind of thinking like, wow, I planned this trip myself. I paid for it myself. I rented this car. I just left my job. You know, like I got off for the weekend, you know, and picked up my girlfriend, and now we're driving together. I have a girlfriend. We have a dog sitter for our dog. Thinking about all these, like, I guess, adult things that came with, and trying to think of the path that got me there. Because I remember when my parents would plan me. Do you remember that? Just being carted around by your parents to things like, oh, we're going to see your aunt this weekend or whatever. Or like, we're doing this. I was thinking about that in context of my whitewater rafting trip. Like, being able to consciously plan something versus just, you know, being ushered around by your parents to various cousins' birthdays or
not just family or events, just like, man.
Museum, like, things.
I mean, they talked about this on Roderick on the Line this week, but do you remember just like having to go to like the store? Like, there was no other option. Like, there, you just had to go to the store. And some stores were like, okay. Like, Kmart was fun because they could like leave you alone in like the book section for a little while, and, you know, probably didn't have to worry about you getting kidnapped or in trouble or anything. But did your parents ever have to go to like Pat Catan's? Because that sucks.
Say that again. What? Pat Catan's?
Okay, like any, like a Hobby Lobby, like a craft store where all they have is like twine.
Yeah, you go on errands. Paint. We got errands to do, my mom would say.
Yeah. Just errands in general. You just had no choice.
Yeah. And this is a real thing. Do you remember like being in a shopping cart, being pushed by your parents and like the kids' shopping cart?
Heck yeah.
Like, you know what? The kids' legs stuck out. Like,
that's like that, that's so, you know, weird, because I don't remember that, but thinking about it now, it's like, okay, they're sitting in the cart, they've got their legs sticking out of the little hole, they're just staring at your chest.
Yeah, because you can't leave them at home, you can't get a babysitter. Yeah. I think that when I was old enough to take care of my brother, it must have been like the best day for my parents in the world. Like, I think we started being allowed to stay home alone when I was like 12 or 13 is when we stopped having a babysitter.
Did you make it 14. Hell for him though?
No.
Really?
No, not at all. We weren't brothers that fought a lot. Mm. If we were fighting, it was like intermediate, like just once in a while fights over a toy or something stupid. It was never, I never bullied Dan. No.
Hmm.
Were you bullied by your sister? She's older than you, right?
No, she's younger.
Oh, she is? Did you bully your sister?
Oh, constantly. Yeah. Yeah, I was actually I was talking to my friend's wife about this the other day, because we apparently lived in very different worlds. She had several siblings. I just had the one. And, we were just talking about how... Well, I guess she didn't live in a different world. She had more siblings, but her husband, my friend Tyler, he was an only child. So he didn't have, like, a sibling to, you know, be nice to or harm. Painfully. And we both did, like, and he thinks this is like totally bizarre, but yeah, no, I like kicked my sister's ass, and she, you know, she often would get me in a position where she could kick mine. Like, she's 3 years younger. It would have like really taken a good jump. I don't know, man. Like, it was, I think honestly the problem was, and this blew her mind, my sister and I shared a bedroom until I was in eighth grade.
I shared a bedroom with my brother from 13 until 21, whenever I was home.
You're of the same sex.
Oh, I guess.
It's an entirely different story, because, I mean...
Yeah, you're right.
There are, like, the boy-girl issues, and there's the brother-sister issues, and then there's the fact that, like, you know, I'm a growing kid. I'm in eighth grade. Well, seventh grade when we moved, and she's 3 years younger, so she's in fourth grade. We're both, like growing people who are trying to become human beings, and we're still forced to live together. We were in close quarters, and we had different personalities, so like we're always like at each other's necks, and I was like stealing her Pokemon cards all the time, and yeah, we were contentious.
You bastard.
But yeah,
just a bastard.
When the time came that we were able to stay home alone because I was able to, you know, babysit, I guess, she made it hell. Like, it was really hard to maintain that trust with my parents, because as soon as they were gone and she knew that it was all on me, she was fucking shit up left and right. I'm like, you need to settle down, or this is not going to be an option for us. I don't
like what, like writing on the walls or something like that, or
no,
what?
Just like, you know, like she would take the chance to, like, you know, eat a bunch of snack food or, like, you know, the cookies and whatever, and make a mess, or like pull out a bunch of my toys to make it look like I was, you know, being super messy while they were gone. Like,
that's so devious.
She,
we were
evil children. Like, we were highly intelligent children when it came to destroying each other's reputation within the home. I would love to have a conversation with my sister to see how much she remembers about this, because we're like friends now. We're friends so far as, like, I don't talk to her very often either. Like, she's totally a friend. Like, I like care about what's going on in her life, but we don't check in that often. Like, we're not contentious. We're not like mean to each other. And we haven't been since I went off to college. Like, having that separation was a huge deal. When we moved, we got our own rooms, and that was helpful, but there was still like at least a decade worth of like bad blood that just carried over into pranks that I could do now, because I had a space to prepare. I had an evil lab where I could prepare these pranks that I was going to pull on my sister, who was in the adjoined room. And I mean, I wish that I would have grown up with like a sibling where we were like fine and friends forever, but that just wasn't the case for us.
Dan and I were so close in age that I think my parents, I don't know if they're serious or not when they say this, but they say, oh, like, we had your brother because we wanted you to have somebody to play with.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're 17 months apart. So, and that was like the majority of the playing we did, you know, mm-hmm. was with one another. So that was true. And I think we only started having problems when we got older, mm-hmm. like when we were in our teens, mm-hmm. because
going after the same girl.
No, not at all. I was in an all boys school. Remember?
Oh, that's right. going after the same boy.
No, it was more about like that weird, because it was me, my brother, my dad, and my mom, mm-hmm. all under the same roof, and that was three men all kind of fighting for control, which is mm-hmm. not right. You know, let me state that first and foremost, not right for three men to be battling for control. But just, you know, moody teenagers to the parents, and then brothers that are close in age struggling for dominance over one another. You know, that was kind of the deal in our teens. And it was about coexisting when we are in high school together, like from 13 to 18, it was just coexistence, living in the same room. When we were just kind of forced into a situation where we had to share a bedroom, we had bunk beds, and
what's kind of, the age difference between the two of you?
17 months.
Yeah, that's like nothing.
Right. It's about a year and a half apart. So, you know, we're pretty much the same age almost. And yeah, it was just,
wow.
Constantly just trying to look cooler than the other. We turn into different people. I turn into like a musician, kind of like punk rocker, not like, you know, studded belts and spiked hair and everything walking around, but more just like, I was more into alt, you know. Dan was into sports, I was not. So that was the big difference is this between us, was like, he was more of like the jock type, still goofy, but like, you know, the jock type with friends that were also similar to that. And I was, you know, like the weird kind of like punk rock kid. Mm-hmm. And so it was that we're just two separate people.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't that we didn't get along. It's just that we didn't have to get along because we didn't run in the same groups. And there would be brief intersections where we'd kind of just try and do something together. Like, he would come to my band practice or something to hang out, and he would just realize how out of place he was. And I would probably go to like one of his friends' birthday parties or something like that, or graduation parties, or some weird event that would draw us together.
Yeah.
Circus, like centered around his group of friends. And I would just be like, oh, I shouldn't be here right now. Or he'd have a friend over for a sleepover, and we'd all be sharing a room, you know, like friends sleeping in a sleeping bag on the ground.
Yeah. You're just there for their sleepover.
Right. Yeah. And that's what it was. We just kind of live together. It was no static, really. We had a couple fights, but it was more just, that was when it was like the, you know, essentially boiled down to, you know, I'm not touching you kind of thing, you know, I'm not touching you.
No.
With the finger, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally get that. Like, it's it's hard because you're just two people who have absolutely no say in the matter of where you're living or where you're sleeping, how close you are to the rest of your family, you know, proximity wise. It's a tough thing. My best friend has two brothers and a sister, and they lived in basically a 2-bedroom house. So work that out. You've got the parents who obviously get one room, and then you've got 4 kids, with an age distribution of like 11 years, and you have basically one bedroom for all of them. So what they ended up doing was they put the girl in. I mean, it was barely bigger than a closet. It wasn't just like a door that you opened up and there was like a little 4x4 space. It was like a full room, and it did have a closet to itself, but it was so small. Like, it could have been a bathroom if it had the plumbing. It was just a very long, small space, but it was big enough for like a bed to go in and a dresser. And that was her room. And the other 3 boys had to just like duke it out in the other room, which is super small. Like, there's no way to like really give context, but I mean, with all the dressers and the bunk bed and the cot where the 3rd boy slept, I mean, this is all within maybe like a 6x8 room. Super tiny. And yet,
that's very tiny.
Yeah. And yet they get along like pretty well. Like, they fight and, you know, they wrestled, and it all changed a lot when the oldest one went to college and then the other one graduated and went to the Marines, and then the girl graduated, and, you know, I'm not really sure what she ended up doing, but then you were left with this younger kid who was like younger by a lot. Like, I think he's maybe just now in high school, and now he has the house to himself.
Yikes.
And they'd been trying to sell that house for years, but it's just like, it was a weird location. It's a weird house, and just nobody was buying it. Like, they wanted to go somewhere where they could, you know, have more space for all the kids. And a lot of times the kids would go sleep away at grandma's house, but it just took time. Like, the kids just had to move out.
Are they close now? Like, very close at all?
Yeah. I mean, they're close enough. You know,
like, because I think that's what does it, because
it's the distance. You know, there's the adage of distance makes your heart grow fonder, but also it's just like, it's not, I think more than anything, it's just not being so close together. When you just get really frustrated.
I try to think about
when you're that close.
I think there's bad experiences too. Like, if you had a sibling that's like a bad egg, you know, or I don't want to paint anybody like that black or white, but there are siblings that kind of just are black sheep and they just make your life hell, and I can get in trouble and kind of like make the family look bad. I imagine that exists in the world, but I don't know. I guess I try to think of families that have that, but I can't, I'm not drawing any examples immediately, but yeah, now that my brother and I are always apart, you know, it makes getting back together a lot easier.
Yeah.
And then we're around each other for like 3 days, and you know, we kind of see the men that we've grown into. Mm-hmm. And you know, Dan is I think he's self-described obsessive compulsive, but mm-hmm. you know, he's like a neat freak, you know, always sweeping, always cleaning, keeping a
really?
Good place. If you disturb his space, he you know, he'll let you hear it.
Interesting. Like, he lived as a fisherman for a little while, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he knows how to rough it, but like when he has a place to himself, he likes to keep it clean and organized. So yeah, I mean, within like, you know, 3 days of me spending time with him, we're pretty much back on the same repertoire, and then we depart again, and you know, we miss each other, but I don't know.
Well, think about it. When you're children, there's no mystery as to what's going on in each other's lives. Like, you're at the same dinner table. You're telling the same parents about what's going on in your day. You know everything that's going on in that person's life, for better or worse. Like, if it's not the stuff that you're telling your parents about that you want them to hear, you know, if you're close enough in age, word travels fast around rural schools, at least in my experience, having been to a rural school. Like, any small school, probably any big school. Like, if everybody knows who everybody is, you know what's going on in that person's life. If somebody starts dating somebody and that person doesn't want to tell their parents yet, their sibling's going to tell them. Like, there's no mystery between siblings when you're growing up. So there's no way to have a conversation with them. Like, what are you going to talk to them about? School? Like, you already know. Like, school work? You don't want to do it anyway. Like, there's no reason to be friends with your sibling, or at least in my experience. I know that there are people that have been friends with their siblings forever, and that they enjoy have always enjoyed hanging out with their sibling. I don't understand that, because I wasn't able to become friends with my sister until I didn't know what was going on in her life. Like, I was trying, like, there were times where, like, my sister would come around, there'd be, like, something that she didn't know about, because I started having a life outside of school, outside of my friends, outside of her family, online, where I was, you know, making a name for myself in the music industry, and I was starting to, you know, find all these bands and listen to all this music. And she would, of course, hear this music through the wall, and she'd hear something as she was passing by my room. Like, oh, I like the sound of that. And, you know, I'd share a band with her, and she started enjoying The Starting Line and Bayside and Punchline, like some of these pop punk bands. And that was kind of cool. It's like, okay, like, all right, now my sister and I at least have like a shared interest, and we were still goofing on each other. But I think that's when things started getting less contentious. But I wouldn't say that we were really friends until I had gone off to college, and she was now in a place where things that she was doing at school weren't going to get back to mom and dad from a brother that was like looking to get her in trouble. So she was starting to make new friends and, like, you know, maybe do things that like she wouldn't have done otherwise, because she was afraid that mom and dad would find out about it. And she was becoming her own person, and she was finding her own music. And then she would send me some bands that I'd never heard of, or like artists and stuff. And that was really cool too, because I was starting to get it, you know, the opposite direction, find new music that way. So we shared that common interest. And then when I would come home, we would go see bands. Like, we actually went to a couple concerts together. I took her to her first concert. We saw Anthony Ranieri solo at Musica in Akron.
Of Bayside.
Right? And yeah, like, that was really cool. She was super nervous. I made her take a picture with him. She totally didn't want to, but we were like the last ones in the venue. And, you know, I had met Anthony once or twice before, and I was like, you know, I had to embarrass her, obviously. Like, I was like, hey, this is her first concert. Do you mind getting a picture? And so in the picture, like, you know, he's packing up his cables on the stage, which is, you know, it's like a 3-foot high stage. And so my sister's standing on the ground. He's basically just kind of like crouched down, holding cables and taking a picture with my sister, who's just blushing. Like, her face is like beet red. Absolutely hilarious. But, you know, that was like a fun, that was like the first time that my sister and I hung out alone socially. And so now, when, you know, she travels a lot for work, and you know, she works at like hotels and breweries, and my sister's just like really into you know, just traveling and like different experiences. So she travels around and works different places, meets a lot of different people, and when she comes home, like, we have things to talk about, like the places that she's been, places that she's worked, and people that she's met. And I've got stuff to talk about, cuz I'm in school and I've got work, and, you know, May and I have a little life together. So like, there's distance, and with that comes like little mystery, and that, if anything, allows for actual conversation, which I think goes a long way between siblings, because god, otherwise, like, I don't know, like, there's I don't know, it's just weird. Like, being siblings is a weird thing. Like, they're family, you don't have a choice in the matter, they're just supposed to be people in your life, and you're close enough in age, well, that it's not like an uncle that you just, you don't have to talk to. It's,
well, that's what I think about, is that, like, where does the change happen? And we talked about leaving, but like, the act of leaving is not what changes your relationship or changes the dynamic of your relationship. I mean, that's what changes it, but why, I guess, is the better question beyond the leaving. What about the leaving makes it change? And I wonder if it's like the idea that when you're growing up, you're kind of just, I feel like when you're a kid, you don't have a lot of choice but to take things for granted, mm-hmm. until you start learning about the world. You know, like, your parents, you can or cannot provide food for you or whatever. You know, you come home to a warm bed every night if you're fortunate enough and you're privileged enough to have things. And, you know, you take your sibling for granted because there's just somebody you're sharing a bedroom with, or there's somebody that's, you know, you're getting a ride home from sports practice with, someone that's just there, you know. And then when you leave And this probably extends to friends too, and kind of explains why, like, we're talking about these like strong bonds that we feel for people that we haven't seen in a long time. But when you leave, and that sense of, and you learn about the world, and you learn about loss, and you learn about distance, and you feel that, like, that not heartbreak or heartache, but like missing somebody, that's where the relationship starts to change, because you stop taking that person for granted, I feel like. And so when you say, like, your sister travels a lot, my brother travels a lot too, you mm-hmm. know, he's all over the world, and I never know where he's going to be. Like, I'll find out, like, with maybe 15 days notice that he's going to Hawaii again, and you know, we grew up in Boston and he's in South Carolina,
at least
New
you
Zealand,
get that. I don't find
LA,
out until my
Miami.
Sister's lived somewhere for like a month.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she's already been there for a while. Like, oh, you are where?
Yeah, oh, you moved, okay.
But that just adds to it then, you know, where you start seeing like, oh, this is somebody I definitely, you know, I took for granted for a long time as a part of my life, and probably cursed them a few times. Yeah. You know, as a kid. And they also, when it is family, they do tie you to your parents, and we know that our parents aren't permanent, and neither are we, but yeah, your sibling is something that ties you to that and kind of reminds you, as my dad gets older, my mom gets older, you kind of remember that, like, you know, the siblings are going to be all you have at some point.
That's true. I don't know. Yeah. I think the absence has something to do with it, at least in my experience, though. I don't think that it's taking something for granted, because I don't think that there was any way that there could have been a scenario where my sister and I were friends growing up. Like, it just wasn't, the circumstances just weren't there. Like, I don't know if it's because, you'd have to ask my sister about this, because half of our relationship is her point of view. And I don't know, I was always like a really good kid and always a really good student. So I think maybe there was potentially an aspect to our relationship where, you know, she was like maybe jealous of me, or the way that my parents like recognized my accomplishments, where, you know, she was a little bit younger. She didn't have the opportunity to do that kind of stuff. You know, I was playing sports and I was doing well in sports, and I was in school and I was doing well in school, and I was in scouts. Like, I had activities, and my sister didn't do as much. Like, not until she eventually joined band. But I had already done band, you know, she's working from a place where everything that she had done, I had already done at some point and done it well. So it, you know, from her perspective, there's probably that point of view. And from my point of view, it's like, you know, there's twerp kid, and, you know, she's not listening to what I'm saying. And I don't know, like, there's probably just like an entitlement from my side, and I don't know what the circumstances were that led us to not be friends. Maybe it was because she pulled my hair when she was an infant, and I remembered that for the rest of my life. Like, there are all these like little microaggressions that just stack up over time, and it leads to contentious attitudes. But I also didn't have a lot of friends that were friends with their siblings. So I don't know. I recognize what you're saying, and I know that it's true for some people that, you know, they had a person they had a sibling that was able to, you know, like be there for them for their entire lives. And that's like that's a good thing. And I can see how some people might take for granted their siblings and like the friendship that they could have there. But I don't know, in my experience, I didn't have an example for how to be a good big brother, I guess. And my sister probably took a lot of my lead. Yeah. It's probably all my fault.
Well, don't be too hard.
We're friends now. It's okay. I think if we weren't friendly, counseling might be a good option. Because, man, we were so mean to each other. My buddy Tyler has absolutely no idea. But, man, when his wife and I were talking about like how mean our siblings were to us and how we were in return, it is actually kind of scary to think about in hindsight. Like, it's actually, you look back at these memories and you're like, man, somebody probably should have recognized that as a problem and dealt with that, because I probably almost killed my sister on a
we need to talk about Jacob
on several occasions. Oh, don't even go there. That is a scary, scary movie. Yeah, I was like terribly violent to my sister, and she was violent back. Like, I mean, man. Yeah. I mean, I was, we would like I guess wrestle is the term, but really it was, I was bigger. It wasn't much of a fight, but she was smart too. Like, she was no dummy. She knew, yeah, he's bigger than me, but if he's coming up the stairs, which has a bend in it, I can stand at the top of the stairs holding his Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles truck, and I can throw it at him when he's on the landing, and then he'll fall down the rest of the stairs. And that happened. And I almost got like really, really hurt. We were bad kids, man. Like, kids need to be watched. I'm grateful that you didn't have that though, because between two boys, I think it could be even worse. Especially
maybe
so close
I'm selectively
in age.
Remembering. I'm sure my brother has a lot of stories, and I can remember the fights, but I don't remember it being. I think it was like 13 and 14 years old. Like, that was when the worst it got, and then we just, as soon as we were out of the same school. There was this weird one-upmanship that happened between the ages of 12 and 14, I think, between my brother and I. Mm-hmm. And it just evaporated as soon as I was in high school and he was still in middle school, and we weren't even in the same school anymore. That's where it all changed. But no, it was mostly good, I think, when I look back on it. There are relationships when I reflect on them, I can remember just the bad times.
Yeah.
But with my brother, I don't. Like, if I think about my brother and I's relationship, I do, and someone asked me how your brotherhood was. It was just, no, it was great. You know, it was normal. It wasn't like, you know, there are brothers I know that are just like seeing each other every week and, you know, always hanging out and kind of just like each other's best friends. I think that's what my parents envisioned for us, but it's not what happened, but we are still very close. And I think that's kind of the best you can really, you know, hope for, mm-hmm. realistically speaking.
How often do you see Dan these days? Is it just like Christmas and Thanksgiving, or?
Not even. Really? I'll see him once a year, wow. Once or twice a year.
Is he coming to visit you, or are you going to visit him? Is it at your mom's?
Well, he stayed with us. He got a contract in New York back in March. So he crashed on my couch for like 2 weeks, much to my roommate Aaron's chagrin. My roommate and girlfriend's Aaron's chagrin.
Yeah.
Who I share this small apartment
and
with.
That couldn't have been very long after you yourself moved in, right?
Yeah, we moved in together in December, and Dan was already crashing in like February, March. I was like, hey, thanks. It's been a great 2 months, babe. Do you mind if my brother just comes to crash? Don't worry. It's going to be real quick, just a couple days, and then he's there for like 2 weeks.
Oh, man.
But that was, yeah. So that's the last that I saw him, and then he bought me tickets to something.
As a gift, like, or a month, to go with him?
For Christmas. He bought me tickets in March. For Christmas, he bought me tickets to a Fleet Foxes show. Ooh. In Charleston, where he was living.
Nice.
So I flew down to Charleston. That was such a great trip, because we did not, like, he had a ton of work to do, because he's, like I said, he's very meticulous about his life, and he's a graphic designer, advertising guy, and he's always hungry for contracts and work, and he's very meticulous about his work. So, you know, he's spending, you know, a regular 8 to 10 hours a day doing work while I'm visiting him in Charleston. And, you know,
that's always, that's fun, right?
It is. I mean, it's hard to not encroach on his life
and
his work, because he's always doing that. I don't know if anybody listening at home has people that invite them places and then make them feel like they're encroaching on their life. But that would be my brother. And I don't blame him for it. I mean, I feel bad, because he's trying to do right by us by inviting us. And but then, you know. And then we come and just like weigh him down. Yeah.
And that stinks. I mean, it's not like he's just like busy with work that, you know, I mean, he's busy with big work. Like, your brother gets really good clients. Like, your brother's very talented, and he has like, these are big contracts that deserve attention.
We're talking like Budweiser and like Coca-Cola here.
Yeah. 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 That's interesting, man. The having people stay over is an interesting conversation to have when you're living with your significant other, when
especially in a one bedroom apartment.
Oh yeah.
you at least have the office. You could roll a sleeping mat out, or like a air mattress.
No, man, we have a spare room, a living room and my bedroom. Office.
Oh yeah. We have. If I had a spare bedroom, like, my mom has to crash on my couch. You know, she's coming to New York City, mm-hmm. and she has to crash. And like, previously, before I lived with Aaron, it would be like, my parents would be coming to town, my mom would be coming to town, and I would beg my mom, be like, Mom, I will crash on my couch, you can have my bedroom, I'll change the sheets, I'll make it nice in there for you, you just don't even worry about it. And now, you know, I have a partner that I'm living with, and
whole new
we have one bedroom, and my mom's like, oh, can I crash on your couch? I'm like, no, you can't crash on my couch, Mom. It's just, I mean, you can, but it just seems wrong.
Yeah. You
know, like,
and
I don't
want
my mother
sleeping
on the couch.
You can't
offer
the bed, because
right,
it's two people.
Right, I can't put Aaron out. Yeah. And that's totally understandable. And I think my mom knows that. But she's like, I just want to sleep on the couch. It's fine. I'm like, Mom.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We had a friend that lived with us for a couple months, actually. She started dating a friend of mine, and she was a friend of May's. And she got a job in the area and had no apartment yet, just kind of apartment hunting. And it took her a while, and I don't blame her, because she was ready to jump on the first apartment that she found, but May went to see it with her, and she's like, no, you're not living here. Feel free to stay with us as long as you need. Find the place that, you know, suits your lifestyle and sense of security. And she was there for a while, but it was very strange. Like, it was a short amount of time, but it was like 3 or 4 months. And it just changes so much about the way that you have to, like, live in your own home. You know what I mean? Like, you've probably had, like, you've had your brother stay there. Like, it messes with your routine.
It does, especially in our apartment, because we have a bedroom that adjoins to the living room. And, you know, if Dan's crashing on the couch, and Dan, if you're listening, this is no problem. All right, buddy, you come here, stay here anytime. All right.
Yeah. But I mean,
this goes to any of my friends.
It does interfere with the way that you would live.
But yeah, no,
normally.
No.
Like, without somebody
Dan,
there, obviously
Dan is
it's
a
different.
Specific case.
Okay.
Dan's a specific case because he's, you know, he would be, if I had to be up at 6, he would be up at 6, you know, and he would be out the door at the same time as me. So it wasn't like that. But like, if anybody like is coming to New York to visit and like, oh, can I stay with you? It's like, I guess, but like, I have to be at the door at 7 and you want to wake up at 8.
And you're on the couch.
You're on the couch, but you have to, like, I'm going to be getting ready. You know, like, I walk around naked in the morning. I'm really sorry about that. Like, it's just, this is something you got to deal with. I got to feed the dog. This dog is going to run around and jump around.
Wait
and
a minute. Please back up. If you walk around naked in the morning, is that post shower or pre shower? Are you sleeping in the buff?
I mean, like, I guess I'm walking around in my underwear.
Okay.
And then after shower, I can walk around naked if I feel like
it. All right.
That's
something I feel like I got to know about you. Are you sleeping in the nude is a particular trait for human beings.
I've heard it can be very disarming for burglars, so I might start taking that consideration. I haven't had any attempts on our life in this apartment, but, you know, it might be a cool method.
All right, well, this is just good to know, because we've talked about either like us visiting you or us going on like a double date trip at some point. So these are things that I want to know.
Yeah, if you come to visit, you're getting an Airbnb, buddy.
All right. That's fine. I would prefer that. I would pay all the money in the world not to see your dangly bits.
I feel like most of the world would agree.
I love having people stay over. When I lived at my dad's, it was a lot easier because, you know, most of my family was gone at that point. My sister was, you know, I guess my sister was still there. She didn't go off to college or anything, so she was still at home, but she stayed very much sequestered to her room, or she was staying over at a friend's. But with my mom gone, like, the rules were a lot more lax, so I had bands staying over. You know, not like all the time, but on several occasions.
Oh, like old best friend?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, I had old best friend stay over. That was just 3 guys. I had Squid the Whale and Yumi and everyone we know stay over, which was like 5 or 6 guys. But yeah, it's a very nice thing for me. I love hosting, but at the same time, it's like, it is inconvenient because it's like, okay, for you, you get up early. And you feel like that might be an inconvenience to somebody that might stay on your couch. For me, I wake up late and then I end up waking early feeling super anxious about all of these random strangers that are just like milling around the downstairs, not knowing what to do with themselves. And I feel like I'm entertaining and I need to wake up and I need to make them breakfast. So, yeah. I mean, that's not how I felt when our friend Melissa came and stayed. She was very independent, and that's totally fine. Like, we were just like, look, you have free reign of the house. Just, you know, do your thing kind of in your own room. But it is weird. Like, it's a weird thing to have other people in your space. And there was like a moment in time where we thought about maybe like asking my sister to move in with us because she was working in our town, but she was living a couple towns over with my mom, and it just didn't make sense. It's like, whether you're with mom or with us, you're going to be like staying in your room all the time anyway. Why don't you just stay with us? But that's when she kind of picked up her traveler's lifestyle and started working at these really cool hotels in all these different states and stuff. So, but I was like almost at a point where I had my sister, who I was contentious with for decades because we lived in close proximity. We almost had her move back in. Would have been weird.
Yeah. I mean, I think I used to pitch an idea back and forth with my brother. I was like, oh, like, I think this is both when we were, well, when I was single at least. But I was just like, oh, we should just get a house and get a dog, you know, at some point, just two brothers living together. And I think he was like, yeah, I'd like that. And a year goes by and we're just in totally different spots in our life. We're like, yeah, that's never going to happen.
Yeah. Where's he? Where's he at these days? Like, he's back in the States. I know he was in New York for a little bit, but
no. Well, I mean, I guess he's not in the mainland. I think. Well, when is he leaving for Hawaii? I think he's leaving any day for Hawaii
for work, or is this one of his like goaways?
I guess they're all goaways. He doesn't really have a home.
Yeah, but I mean,
he's not homeless.
Like,
but
he comes stateside to like metro areas to specifically for contract work. Like, is this one of his things where like he's going somewhere for work, or is he going somewhere and maybe might work while he's there? Is this just a place where he wants to be?
I don't know exactly. We haven't talked about it, and I imagine he has a contract or something there. But he also works four jobs when he goes there to Hawaii. He, you know, he gets a place to live, and he does a shuttle launch. He fishes, and I mean, it's inspiring what he does. You know, he said he woke up every morning at like 4 a.m., you know, and would go down to the docks and just wait for the fishermen to get there, like prey upon the fishermen and ask them, you know, like if he could work on their boats and be like, listen, I don't have a lot of experience, but I'm a hard worker and just please just take me on your crew. And he did. That's how he learned all this stuff. And, you know, like that's just his lifestyle down there, working four jobs. And I don't know if the design work is as plentiful out there. I think he'd get a bunch of jobs, but I don't think it's the work he's looking for.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem that he seems to mind. Like, I mean, he's working on some pretty big contracts. It's my thought that maybe he probably makes a pretty good living on like those big contracts, and that probably affords him the opportunity to like go live and just try new things in all of these different exotic locations.
It does, yeah. I think it's just he works and then has enough to go do some stuff and do what he wants. And I think he feels the best when he's in Hawaii, just chilling there and doing a lot of surfing and fishing and just living the good life as many in Hawaii do.
Cool.
He's got a lot of good stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a lot of good stories.
Good pictures, too. Yeah,
yeah, that's also the good part about not seeing each other every once in a while. You have something to tell each other.
Right.
I think that's something you also don't get. Because also, in high schoolers don't do anything. There's nothing interesting that any high schooler has to say, ever.
No.
You know, in America, at least, you know. I don't think we face a lot of adversity here, you know. Or my family didn't, obviously.
Well, it's interesting at the time. When you're in high school, everything that your friends are doing is interesting to some degree. Especially if it's something like outside of what you'd normally do, but in the grand scheme of things, like, it's all pretty conventional.
Yeah, yeah. But now that he, you know, is like doing this globetrotting thing and all this weird stuff happens to him and he has, you know, we get together for the first time in 6 months and he's just, oh, this happened. And I'm like, oh, wow. Man. Yeah, he's got a lot of good stories. Want to probably call him, huh?
Yeah, you should. I was just thinking about that, actually. I was like thinking, okay, when did I last talk to my sister? And usually I talk to my sister most when I talk to most of my family most, actually, when my Plex server goes down. I get text messages from my family all the time, like this one from my dad, where he says, Plex down. I said, we lost power and our downstairs neighbor isn't home. I live in like a split level old house. So our breaker box is in the basement of our downstairs neighbor. So if they're not home, I'm not actually able to do anything about it. And so I told my dad that. I'm like, you know, neighbor's not home. And he's like, what does the neighbor have to do with it? I said, well, the breaker box is in the basement. He's like, you're currently with no electricity. He's like now all in on this like grave injustice that I'm facing. And we're not like we lost power to like half of the house because we have power on like two different boxes or two different breakers in the box. And like, no, just we let our landlord know. But, you know, we got to kind of wait for him to get the OK to enter that apartment because, you know, the law. And he's like, ugh. Like my dad's frustrated, not necessarily for us in our predicament, but because he can't watch the new Jurassic Park movie that I have on my server. And this is the kind of thing that I get a lot from my sister. And sometimes like it's, you know, she's just wondering if it's down, or I'll reach out to her because I'll see that she watched something and, you know, just kind of reach out about that. But it's like very superficial, like very lightweight stuff. My mom actually, like, we see her on occasion. We went over to her and her boyfriend's house for dinner recently, and that was nice. But usually I only hear from her if like she has something for me or some kind of news or something. Today I got one that was like almost a little disturbing. I'm like sitting here at my computer, I'm doing some work, and I get a text from my mom, and I can just see the preview up in the notification, and it says, I share the news with your sister, and I want to share the news with you too, ellipses. And at this
what?
Yeah. So I'm like, great. So I open up the thing and I start reading it. I share the news with your sister, and I want to share the news with you too, your grandmother. And my my heart drops. And then I finish the sentence and it says, your grandmother has gotten herself a tattoo.
What the hell? Your mom is just so...
Like, don't start sentences like that at all. But yeah, grandma got a
every
tattoo.
Every time I text my mother, I'm thinking about how I can word it to make sure she doesn't think I'm dead or something. Like, that's how I start my composition of text, is just saying, all right, how is she going to interpret this first word that she sees? Like, that your mother just, like, giving the worst thing in the world. Usually, I have to start a text with, like, I'm doing all right and healthy. Like, everybody's okay. Don't worry. And then I say what happened or something like that.
I often will take a picture of something in the wild with my hand near it for scale and send it to her, like that mushroom I talked about recently. And that way she can see that I'm alive, because she can see part of my body in the photograph.
But severed hand.
But it's just like a conversation start. Yeah, someday if I ever get my hand cut off, I'm just gonna put the hand next to like a butterfly or something. Say, check this thing out. Yeah, so my grandma got a tattoo, which is good for her. Like, she texted me, and you know, she's like,
of what?
Well, that was my first question, right? Like, what did my grandmother, who is in her, you know, 70s, what did my grandmother get a tattoo of? And she said a bluebird, a rather large bluebird on her forearm. And, you know,
that's sweet.
Like, exactly. You know, that's good for her. My grandmother has been a parent for her entire life. Like, she had children at a fairly young age. Like, the age distribution between her kids is, like, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's almost like a 20-year gap between the first and the last kid that she had. And then, you know, over time, you know, her older kids get older and then they have grandkids. And so she's taking care of grandkids all the time when the parents are at work and stuff. So I'm over there often and whatever. And her youngest daughter, my youngest aunt, she eventually started like pitching in and helping babysit when grandma had to go to work, because she worked a full-time job at a hospital, really stressful job. She worked in healthcare forever. But, you know, she still had a daughter at home and grandkids around all the time. And then when we're old enough that we don't need grandma to babysit us anymore, and her youngest daughter is old enough to, like, go off to college and, you know, have a life of her own, you know, things happen. And, like, one of her older sons had to move back in and live there for a time, like, in his 30s. And then when he moves out shortly after, the youngest moves back in because she is now married and she has two kids or, you know, whatever. And they need a place to stay where, you know, because money's tight. And for my entire grandmother's life, like, she's been a mom for like 60 years. It's crazy. And now, like, she's on her own and she's got an empty nest and she gets a bluebird tattoo. And I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. I love that. My mom seems really weirded out about it, but I don't know. I think it's good. Good for her.
Yeah, for sure.
Why not?
You got to do it. Well, I
you're
mean,
70.
You know,
like, do that. Do whatever the hell you want. You're retired. You've got nobody in the house. Like, go get a tattoo. Go to rock shows. Go, like, I don't know. Do whatever the hell you want, Grandma.
Oh, we should do an episode about tattoos.
Yeah? Do you have...
Because I don't think either of us... I don't
no,
have
yeah,
tattoo.
I don't have tattoos either. What would that be about? The tattoos we have? Just, or the, right, the so tattoos
look,
we want?
Here's this tattoo. I've been thinking about this tattoo for a while. Mm. That's what we got to do. Yeah. Just us spitballing about tattoos that we want, but we're never going to get.
Or have wanted, because I feel like I've had that dream for a long time, but those dreams change over time.
Yeah, I'm too chicken shit.
Yeah.
To get a tattoo.
What would you want? Like, we're not going to make an episode of this, Mike. What tattoos have you wanted?
I've never wanted a tattoo. This is
seriously?
No, there's only one. No, my brother has his knuckles tattooed, but not in like a, you know, jailhouse one. He has his two middle knuckles tattooed. And so basically he has, I think the letter V basically going up and down to and from on his two middle fingers on his fist.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
So basically it's just like light blue tattoo. He got that in Africa, I think.
Hmm.
And like his whole thing is like, oh, it's like giving and receiving. I think life's about giving and receiving. And that's just like the arrow coming and going from my body. You know, like that's what I think. And that's what his tattoo is. And so I want matching ones, but it's really funny because he got the tattoo when he was in Florida. And the symbol that he got tattooed on him is the same as this Nordic rune for, I don't really know what, I think it's Kenaz or something like that. I don't know what the actual, how to pronounce it. It's Kenaz, I think. That's the Nordic rune that my mother always associated with me. I'm not Norwegian. I'm Italian. I don't know why she associated
with
me.
Yeah, that was my next
question, man. Yeah, definitely not Norwegian. My hair is very brown and my skin is very dark. So... she basically would just buy me this ring over and over again, and I kept losing it. And I was like, oh man, I'm just going to get this symbol tattooed on my finger because it's easier than losing this ring forever. And I think I'm on my third iteration of this, this ring, I guess. I'm wearing it now for the first time in like years. And I wanted this tattoo for a while, and my brother goes to Africa and comes back with kind of like the inverted, like the rotated 90 degree version of the tattoo that I wanted. And I was like, that's weird.
Mm.
And he didn't know anything about my tattoo idea, but he just came back with his. He also has a big tattoo going across his side as well.
Mm.
Says something in Italian. So
it's bold.
You know, it's very bold at the beach. It makes a statement.
Italian,
it's
not,
a nice
not
tattoo.
Latin, though. It's not like a...
No, okay. No, it's a amore supra tutto. It's like, I think it means love above all, I think. And it's very big. It's a very large tattoo. But he likes it, and he knows what he likes.
That's good.
It's a nice font, too.
There's only been a few that I've wanted over the years, and they're like all band logos. Like bands that I've, you know, like bands that have like stuck
you
with
know,
me for a long time.
You can't do that.
I know, that's the
can't
thing.
Can't do that, man.
I heard a long time ago that you can't get a band tattoo until after the band is dead. Until
no,
they can no
nope.
longer disappoint you. Because...
No.
Why not?
You can't. I mean, because even after you, like, the John Lennon's dead.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a bunch of people got his stupid face tattooed on them.
Yeah, they have.
Like, the cartoon version of it. And then, but he's also, like, a wife beater, you know? Like, so why do I want that face on my body, you know? Like,
yeah.
he's long gone.
That's true. And there are a lot of people out there with Lost Prophets tattoos. And,
oh, yeah, for sure. Those
as I lay down.
Meant a lot to some people.
And,
yep.
Yeah, it's tough. But I don't know.
Any band you can think of. It's just not safe to put something as temporary as a human being on your body.
I know.
Unless it's like your family member.
And that's why I likely never will. But I, for a long time, I like fantasized about like this little section of my body in a place where nobody could see. I was always really adamant about that. If I was ever going to get a tattoo, it was going to be a place where nobody could see it if I was like in my swimsuit. And, you know, that basically rules out the torso. And, puts it pretty close to some spots where you don't want to get too close to with needles.
Slippery when wet on a stop sign, right? That's it, your tattoo idea.
Yeah. But no, like the Bayside Bird and the Coheed Keyworks, like those were the only two that I was like ever like really serious about. Because everything else is just, I always like lifted stuff. I'm like, oh, that's okay.
I know a guy who got the Billy Joe Armstrong tattoo, like whatever tattoo Billy Joe has on his arm or whatever, he got that tattooed in his arm too. And people be like, why, what does that tattoo mean? He's like, oh, Billy Joe's got it. And it would just,
okay, but what does that mean to
sure
you?
Right. I'm sure he could say something. I mean, he loves Billy Joe. Like Green Day was his favorite band. And I'm sure like he knows more about the tattoo that he's letting on, but still he just got it because Billy Joe Armstrong had it. And it was just the stupidest thing.
Billy Joe Armstrong has a lot of tattoos. He's
the one in his forearm, I think.
The one? He's got several sleeves.
Oh, does he?
At least one and a half from what I can see. Two sleeves.
I remember it looked, I feel like it looked like a coat of arms or something like that. I can't really remember.
He's a colorful man.
Punk rocking old man.
Yeah. Read an article recently that said that he's this person considers him as influential as who's the guy from that band, Nirvana? Kurt Cobain.
Kurt Cobain?
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell if you're being facetious right now.
A little bit. I don't know. I was really into Green Day growing up. And like, yeah, he's really influential in my life. I don't know. It's hard to like compare.
I'm sure
him
people
were
saying the same thing about Kurt Cobain too. When like people who are into like The Who or whatever, you know, like this, oh, people saying Kurt Cobain is influential.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Whatever. It's just pop culture. Pop culture, people shouldn't be tattooed on you unless you know them.
Unless you know them, I feel like that's even kind of weird sometimes. Like, it definitely, at least, like, there's meaning to it. But tattoos, to me, like, I always feel like the more meaning to it, like, the more cheesy it is. Because they're so, like, you gotta get real clever for something that's like a tributary tattoo to be, like, cool. And tattoos, for me, growing up, were always like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is a cool tattoo. But if somebody just has, like, you know, I heart mom or, like, their grandmother's face on them, you know, like, nothing against them. Like, obviously, like, somebody's tattoo is very personal to themselves, and who am I to judge it? But I don't know. I never felt compelled to put something, like, that personal on me because I always thought, like,
No, I've never been moved as hard. Like, I've never... Like, if it's... I've gone to a tattoo shop before with a friend and kind of talked about it. A lot of tattoo artists won't do knuckle tattoos unless you have, like, a full sleeve first.
Really?
Like, they call them job killers or whatever, or, you know, interview ruiners. They won't... Like, unless you've committed to a life of having tattoos.
Huh.
Which I think is... I think we are in a society now that is changing. I don't think it's going to be as hard for people with tattoos to get jobs. I still like, unless you're going to certain sectors, you know, but yeah, a lot of tattoo artists that I've met with, you know, and discussed the tattoo with, when I say, oh, I want to get this on my knuckles, they just go, no, sorry, man. We don't do it. And then I actually show them what I want. They're like, oh, okay. You don't want like PUNX tattooed on your knuckles or whatever. You don't want to have like, fuck you tattooed across your things. Like, this is not like that kind of tattoo.
Yeah.
It's more like like you wouldn't notice it. If you shook my hand, you wouldn't see it. I just don't think I could explain myself as well, though. Like if someone's like, what's that tattoo of? Like, what's that bird behind your ear? Or like, what's that, what's that thing? Like, I would just be like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. I'm interested to find out what grandma's tattoo is all about. Like, I don't know. It's just so strange. It is out of the blue. It's totally surprising, but good for grandma.
I'm going to get your face tattooed on my arm, Jacob.
Please don't.
That's what I'm going to do.
Please don't.
That's one I could never... I know exactly what you're going to be for the rest of your life. You could go out and become a serial killer just to spite me.
Heck yeah, I could. I did the... A friend of mine got a tattoo of my face, and it was terrible. Because that's the thing. You don't ever get somebody's like face tattooed. It's just...
Well, think about, like, how many people got, like, Pepe the Frog tattooed on them.
And now it's a racist meme.
He became... Yeah. I mean, they're taking it back. You know, like, the creator of Pepe the Frog is... You know, I've heard the Reply All episodes, so I know that they're fighting to retake that symbol.
It's a losing battle, character. Though. Like, there's... That thing's gone. Like, it's
like a Hydra. It's a Hydra. Yeah. You cut one head off and whatever.
Yeah. And it's always there. Like, that tattoo is always on you, and the record of what that meme became is always on the internet.
Yeah, it's tough. Last, I want to leave you with this story. I had a music teacher in high school. We were talking about tattoos and what tattoos you should get, and the music teacher was like, "Oh, that's so dumb. Like, you shouldn't get a tattoo. There's 100 people. There's like a million people in the 80s that got little Tasmanian devils or Tweety birds tattooed on their ankles." And I was hanging out with my friends and just made, like, someone was talking about tattoos, and I'm like, "Yeah, there's a million people with tattoos of Tweety birds and Tasmanian devils on their ankles, you know, from the 80s. And my friend Will, who's, you know, one of my best friends in the world, goes, "Hey, my mom's got a tattoo of a Tasmanian devil." And I was like, "Oh my God.
Man, that's...
What are the odds? What are the odds?"
Pretty strong. I mean, if I see like, an older
there's
person...
There's a lot of Tasmanian devils.
No, there really are. And Tweety's. Like, that's an apt observation. If I see like an older person, I guess as a kid, I would notice those a lot too. And it was, if it wasn't like stars on somebody's ankle or like a heart that's like exploding into birds or the infinity symbol that says love in script on it, it was a Tweety bird or a Tasmanian devil. And they're all on people in their 40s. So like these people now are like at least in their 50s or 60s. And
cocaine is a hell of a drug.
I don't know. Well, do you remember, like, if it wasn't a tattoo, like, there were Tasmanian devils and Tweety birds on the backs of cars,
the stickers? Yeah for sure. And like, it's like the Calvin pissing like bumper sticker, you know.
Well, that's still really common,
ubiquitous.
That's still
right.
That's,
but that's what the Tweety bird, that's what the Tasmanian devil thing was, on the back of a pickup truck window. I imagine out where you are in like rural Ohio, that it was probably even more so.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Being in Boston, I saw them. So
every half of the cars here are trucks.
Ben from Venetia Fair, he wanted to get a tattoo. He just wanted to get Andy written across his foot.
What? Wait, why?
Do you get it?
Oh, yes, Toy Story. In fact,
Toy Story. Yeah.
I watched that scene yesterday where... I think this is a Toy Story 2, where Woody is being like repaired by Jerry,
yes,
from Jerry's
by
Game.
The collector, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah. Yes. That's why it popped in my head so fast.
Okay, I thought you're gonna keep going.
Well,
on that. Yeah.
Well, there is. I'm not sure what it says about me. The reason of why I clicked it. Mike, the past week has been rough for me, and it's just been a strange week. But to like to make myself feel a little better, I've been watching a lot of like stand-up specials on YouTube, like old specials that aren't getting like pulled down by, you know, copyrights, because the copyright holders don't even have digital copies of these things. These are like 80s HBO specials that were recorded and then illegally distributed on VHSs and then later uploaded to YouTube. So I've been watching a lot of Emo Phillips, a lot of Stephen Wright, and for some reason in the recommended videos there was a Toy Story 2 ASMR video, and I don't watch these normally. Like, I've maybe watched like one just so I knew what the acronym meant.
Do you get the feeling? Do you get the tingles when you listen to it?
No, because I don't think this was like a true video. It was just that scene where he's like getting fixed up, and there are like a lot of like noises that I guess people would deem pleasant, but also, there's a score. It's a Pixar movie. There isn't a silent scene without speech that isn't, you know, drenched in cinematic music. But yeah, I watched the whole damn thing.
Trying to make yourself feel better with Stephen Wright, that could go wrong. That could go wrong very quickly.
Yeah, Stephen Wright wasn't like the go-to. I've watched the 1987 Emo Phillips special at the Hasty Pudding Theater twice this week in its entirety. That's where I start. Stephen Wright's just like one of those like recommended videos because he was around the same time. They're generally
you need Bill Hicks.
Bill Hicks. No. That's, I don't know. Like, I, if you,
that could put you in a bad spot.
If you made a list of my favorite stand-up comedians, it would be pretty similar to like the list of the top like one-liner comedians, like Dimitri Martin, Bo Burnham, Stephen Wright, Mitch Hedberg, and I guess Emo would be in there too for like half of his sets. Like those are my favorite comedians, and I bet if you looked up like top one-liner comedians, they're probably all in the top 10. Yeah. Bill Hicks
for more on Jacob's ability to watch things multiple times in the same day or week.
I'm an incredibly broken person. I'm a broken person. And
hey, don't be so hard on yourself, buddy.
It's okay. We'll get through this. Get through this. It's mathematics, man. Right. It just all comes back to math. Yeah.